everyone, and welcome to another edition of Meat Trapper Radio. We've got a kind of a varied show tonight. I'm going to respond to some listener emails and some listener questions and talk about a subject that you will probably never before heard of in relation to trapping, and that is Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. But first, I want to remind everybody that Meat Trapper Radio is powered by Southern Snares and Supply, southernsnares.com. Now, if you'll check out my YouTube channel, I just did a review of their survival snaring kit. And this is a really slick little kit. It's a dozen of 3/64 inch diameter, 1x19 cable snares with their Mini Pro lock and a quick release in on it. These snares come pre-dipped. They are ready to use right out of the bag. You also get a coil of 16 gauge support wire, and the snares do have a vinyl tubing support collar sized to fit the wire properly. Now, if you've got a bug out bag, or if you just want to throw this in a backpack or in the back of your canoe or somewhere like that so that you have this with you, it is a great little kit. And you can go to my YouTube channel and see a full review of it. Check them out at southernsnares.com. It's a quality outfit and it's quality merchandise. These are not junky snares. These are top of the line, well-made snares. I would have no problem whatsoever using these snares on my line, and I will. So check them out. Now, one of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight is, like I said, answering some listeners' questions and reading some email. Because to be honest, I honestly learn more from you guys than I ever pass on. It's amazing how much I learn from doing this show. You wouldn't think it would be that way with me doing all the talking, but when you guys contribute and write and send your question in, I'm not doing the talking. You are, and not only am I learning from you, but everyone else listening is learning to you, and that's what makes it so great. It's really a synergistic platform where everybody contributes and everybody benefits. But I got a great email from my buddy Rafael, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's fairly lengthy, but what I found interesting, and this is what I'm trying to accomplish on Meat Trapper Radio. He says, in part, he says, quote, "I cannot believe that while I live in a city with 6 major universities, 5 or 6 million people, hundreds of libraries, and have access to more TV channels than I can surf through an evening without my head exploding, that I have found a site such as Trapping Radio with information on not only how I can live a better, more wholesome life, how I can feed my family in good and bad times, but also where the truth can be found." And, Rafael, I really appreciate that. That really makes me feel good. And thank you very much for taking the time to share that. That really means a lot to me. Now, also I got an email from my friend Joe, and I thought this was a really good question, and I thought rather than respond to Joe one-off, that I would just share my thoughts on his question on the episode here. He said, basically, "I'd like to know what things you thought were important enough to teach your son." This is in reference to my son being homeschooled. He says, "I have a young son that will most likely be homeschooled. I have some things I have learned and that I think are important. Own some metal," talking about precious metals, "stay out of debt, do everything you can to build your own house when you're young, pick a profession that you enjoy because you may only get one good chance to pick it, and think long and hard about a business you can start on your own." And then, he sort of asks, what, as far as homeschooling, in addition to the regular tuition and everything, what did I feel like were important things to teach my son? And I tell you, Joe, that's a great question, because our kids are being failed on so many levels, it's not even funny. Not only is government school failing to educate them in history, in math, science, but it's failing to educate them on how to be competent human beings, how to grow into competent men. And so I sort of have three categories that I try and keep in mind when working with my son. Now, he's a teenager now, so fortunately, he already knows everything. You know, it, being 14, there's not a whole lot that somebody as stupid as I can possibly ever teach somebody who already knows everything. And those of you that have teenage boys, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I try and divide it into three categories. And the categories that I try and pass on to him fall into technology, practicality, and entrepreneurship. Now, technology for me is easy. I'm an IT guy, so it comes natural. But there is no excuse for anybody listening to this broadcast to not be able to create their own website. It really is that easy. And I'm even thinking about doing a course or doing a video beginning to end, how to get hosting, web hosting, how to set up a website, all of that stuff. And I don't know if there's enough interest, if people are interested in that, maybe a 2-hour step-by-step course on how to do that, I might offer that. But there are too many trappers that have this attitude that I'm too old to learn this new stuff, I'm no good with computers, I can't figure it out. And that's just a bunch of crap. That's just crap. My mother-in-law, okay, who's elderly, runs a successful business off of her website. She does monogramming, and last year she grossed $80,000 over the web. And she didn't hire anybody to do anything. Okay? You either are going to learn technology, or you're going to get passed by technology. It's one of the two. And I would strongly urge you to learn it. So I teach my son that sort of stuff, you know, programming computers, programming Arduino chips. He's gotten here lately into synthesizing music, where he has software that he creates electronic or digital music and layers tracks on top of tracks to make the songs. He uploads them to SoundCloud and that sort of thing. And so that's important. That kind of stuff is important. We live in a technological world, and it's only going to get more technological as time goes by. So that's not the kind of thing that they teach kids in school. Okay, when they go to computer lab at school, it was a waste of time for him. But now that he's homeschooled, I can sit down and we can go through building out a website and all of this stuff. So technology is key. Now, when it comes to practicality, I mean stuff like how to change oil in your truck, how to change a tire, how to change filters in the air conditioner for the air conditioner in your house, how a furnace works, just things like that. How to troubleshoot small engines, a lawnmower. If the lawnmower doesn't start, what do you do? Because the sad and incredibly stupefying fact of life today is I work with college kids that have graduated college in the top of their class, and we hire them as computer programmers, and they don't know how to pop the hood on their car, much less how to change oil. You know, they're living in a fancy apartment, driving a fancy car, and they just take it in for service. And if the car doesn't start, they call AAA, and they stand there until somebody comes and does it for them. They're helpless. I mean, these kids aren't going to change a tire. You know, there's a commercial, a little funny commercial on TV about it's from an insurance company, and the two teenage boys are stuck on the side of the road with a flat tire, and they don't know how to change it, and they're trying to call their dad for instructions, and you know, he's trying to tell them, you know, go get a lug wrench, and they have no idea what a lug wrench is. They have no clue. And you know, if I didn't take my son and say, okay, in our truck, the jack and the lug wrench are kept under the passenger seat. Let's go. Let me show you how to pull the passenger seat up. Let's get that out. Let me show you how to change this tire. He would have no clue because nobody's ever going to teach him. If I'm not going to teach him, nobody's going to teach him. You know, he's not going to get it at school. That's for sure. They don't have shop class anymore. You know, it wasn't like when I was growing up where you could do welding and wood shop and, you know, work on engines and stuff like that. They don't have any of that. So all of that stuff has to be taught. And of course they don't want to learn it. They want to go play on the Xbox or something. Where food comes from, you know, being a trapper, my son knows all about where food comes from. But most people, you know, they think food comes from the grocery store. You know, that's where it comes from. And then the last category is entrepreneurship. Right now, my son has started a leaf blowing business. He invested his own money, bought him a nice backpack leaf blower, and made up some flyers and went and passed them out. And, you know, he's learning that the more he does, the more money he makes. And that's a radically different mindset than I get X number of dollars to stand around at a fast food place for an hour. It's a totally different mindset. And to me, that's a critical mindset, entrepreneurship. And then when he does get his money, I don't force him to save, but what I do is I will match anything that he wants to put towards buying silver or investing. So we go to the coin shop once a month. He goes with me. And if he wants to buy $20 worth of silver, I put $20 on it and match it. If he wants to buy $100, I put $100 on it. And what's interesting is that matching really gave him the incentive to continue, because after 2 or 3 months, he sat down and started counting his silver, and he was like, wow, look at all of this that I've got. And I'm like, yeah, you see? And so that really helped to reinforce that, because if it had just been whatever he put in, it wouldn't have, you know, it would have only been half as much, and it wouldn't have been as impressive to him. So to me, that was a good thing to do. So, you know, Joe, I appreciate that. Oh, he had one other question, and that was, how do you feel about the 300 AAC blackout? Now, for you guys that aren't into ARs, the 300 Blackout is a 30 caliber cartridge that is designed to be fired through a stock AR-15, as long as it has a different upper receiver for that caliber, different barrel. But it uses the same magazines and everything. It's basically a 5.56 cartridge where the neck has been blown out to accept a 30 caliber cartridge. And Joe, I've shot the 300 Blackout. I've got a buddy that's eat up with 300 Blackout fever. And for me, you got to remember, I'm coming at this from an outdoors perspective, not a tactical perspective. I'm not a tactical guy. I'm an outdoors guy. And I think the 300 Blackout was specifically designed to give the military the capability to fire a 30 caliber cartridge out of basically a stock weapon, and to allow for it to be easily suppressed. And when you start loading that 300 Blackout down with a suppressed load, you put a suppressor on your weapon, you can go way, way down in barrel length, to, all the way to a 9-inch barrel, and you've still got a very, very manageable package. And when it comes to short distance room clearing operations and that sort of thing, it really packs a heck of a wallop. But when you start trying to apply all of that to a deer hunting situation, to me, it's a solution looking for a problem. I'll take a 30-30 any day of the week over the 300 Blackout. It's, I can't think of a single outdoors hunting, food gathering situation where the 300 blackout is my weapon of, or caliber of choice. And that's just me. I think, whether you go with a 22 Hornet or anything else, it's just to me, it's a problem. It's a solution looking for a problem. So if you're into the tactical side, it's a great thing. If you're in the hunting and outdoor side, to me, it's there's no reason for me to go down that road. So anyway, that's really about all I know to tell you as far as that. So I really do appreciate that. That was a great question, and because I did go and look at the 300 blackout, and I did all the math and the mental gymnastics, and I just couldn't get fired up about it. Now, also, I have basically a response from Barry, and this was in response to a previous episode. So let's see what Barry has to say.
Listening to the Civil War podcast, that was an excellent podcast, as well as the Revolutionary War and the Grain Eater podcast. That really summed up about 90% of what's been on my mind for the last 5 to 6 years. Those three podcasts were awesome, and it has me asking a question, and I thought it easier to just record it and send it to you, because it's a lot to write and sit down. But I study a lot of that stuff. I study a lot of history, human history, and I really like to try to study about pre-written human history. And what I found, combined with the information in your podcasts, has really led me to believe that, the last free people walked the earth, the last truly free people that walked the earth were hunter-gatherers before agriculture. Agriculture seems to be the end of true freedom, except for a few exceptions, here and there. And it almost begs the question of why fight again, honestly. All we've done since agriculture started has been pretty good at being slaves, and I don't like to admit it, but it seems that most people in this country and the world throughout history have been pretty comfortable being slaves. Freedom's a joke now. It just doesn't exist. When you take the United States, we're supposedly free. I don't own my home. I don't pay property taxes on my home. They come and take it. They can take it eminent domain. They can take it a bunch of different ways. I don't own my vehicle. I've got a license to get married. I've got a license to hunt and fish. I can't cook something in my home and sell it for a profit without them getting a cut. I mean, unless they get a cut of your life, you're basically not allowed to do it. I mean, we're not free at all. We're absolutely not free at all. And supposedly, the Revolutionary War fought to get away from the War of Independence, as you put it, fought to get away from British oppression, to be replaced instantly with American oppression. I mean, how long did it take to use the army against the people to crush the Whiskey Rebellion, as you talked about, after we had fought that war to be free? And there you go, being abused by a government again. And it seems government will never work. It will never be an answer. And we just seems like to be going through these cycles throughout history, where we fight, we get what we want, and that slowly gets eroded back to what we were before we fought, if not worse. And we end up right back where we start. I think you can argue that right now we are, over 200 years later, we are well beyond the oppression we were experiencing under British rule. And were the lives worth it? Were the men who fought and died, was it really worth it? And the next coming fight, whatever that might be, but there's always a war around the corner. It just always seems to happen. And in our country, there's definitely some conflict coming, but my question is it worth it again? I mean, why should I go die now so society can be right back where it was 3 or 4 generations later? I mean, to me, it wasted my life. Or wasted my death. I only get one of those. And don't get me wrong, there are things that I absolutely would fight over. I mean, if some kind of force or occupying army set up shop around my home and my family was in threat for their safety, if I had to worry about my wife being raped or my boys being hurt, I mean, no question about it, I'm going hunting. It's worth dying at that point. But I mean, as far as a cause to get behind again, and honestly, let's call that cause freedom, because that's what everybody always seems to call it. Is it really worth it again? And I don't know how to answer that, because if you look at history, it almost seems like unless you erase technology, unless you erase progress after agriculture and give that up, which we never will, that we're incapable of being free. It's like we want to be controlled. And, you know, 99% of our society seems to be okay with it. I'm not. It drives me absolutely insane that I got to give a cut of my production to the government, and I'm smothered by their rules on a day-to-day existence if you pay attention, and it drives me absolutely insane. But I'm one of 5,000, maybe. I don't know how many people in the population, you know, actually feel that way the same way I do, or more accurately are actually willing to do something about it. And honestly, would it be worth it anymore? I don't know. I really don't know. Not to mention, the times have changed as far as resistance goes. I mean, if you were to fight again, you know, your militia groups and any kind of groups, they're watched by the feds. Anything that might be a threat, they're infiltrated by the feds. And I just can't help but think that if something was to happen, the people that they are aware of that would actually do something are going to be dealt with right away. So it's dangerous to organize in those kind of groups, I believe. But anyhow, that's just what's on my mind after listening to those podcasts, and I just thought I'd ask the question to you, or at least say what I just said. I don't know how much of that was a question. I just kind of rambled on. But anyways, thanks for those podcasts. They were excellent, excellent content.
Well, thank you for that, Barry. You are absolutely 100% correct in your assessment. You're absolutely dead on. We are, in this country, far, far beyond the level of oppression or control that the founding fathers rebelled against the English for. And you're right, it's a cycle, and the cycle is due to the nature of humanity. People want power. People want power over other people. People want to control what other people do. People want to profit at other people's expense. And it doesn't matter what country you're in, what governmental system you're under, it's always going to end up that way. And you're also correct in your assessment of why go and fight for freedom if it's just going to end up being unfree. And here is where my take is on that. You have to understand what freedom really is. Freedom is not something that you go and give to others with an army. And the American people have been brainwashed for far, far too long into thinking we're going to go free the Iraqi people. We're going to go free the Muslims in Afghanistan. We're going to go free the Filipinos from Spanish oppression. We're going to free the Cubans from communism. We're going to free all of these other people. And we need you to go fight and die for freedom. Well, of course, we all know that's not freedom. Freedom is the ability to eat, drink, smoke, grow what you want without another man telling you, you cannot eat this. If you drink this, I'm going to put you in a cage. That's what freedom is about. And how do we accomplish that? You're right. Every group is infiltrated. You know, you look at the Bundy thing where they occupied up there in the Northwest. There were more federal informants, more federal undercover people inside that building than there were non-undercover people. You know, it's a joke. And so the way I see it, we have to free ourselves by avoiding contact with them. The more we can avoid contact with them, the freer we are. My view is to let them and their system collapse by in and of itself, because it is unsustainable and they have to suck us dry like the leeches that they are to sustain their system. You know, that's where the, you know, we're just a crop that gets sheared, sheep that gets sheared every year at tax time. And that's where the whole thing comes in, and the whole idea behind this podcast is, you know, I go back to the example of trapping meat instead of selling fur, because, you know, you go out and you buy your traps, you got to pay taxes on that. And then you catch the animal and you sell the fur, you get a check, you're going to put that in the bank, they're going to tax that as income. Then you take the money out of the bank and you go to the store and you buy hamburger and you pay sales tax on that. So it's tax at every step of the way. And if you trap your food and make your own burger, you've eliminated all that. They don't tax the first sale. They don't tax the buying of the meat at the store. They don't get a cut of anything. They're completely cut out of the picture. And the more you can do everything, maintenance on your vehicle, the more you can do yourself, the more you can recycle, the more you can take something and make it yourself rather than have to get in the system and feed the system, the freer you are and the poorer they are. There was a book that really started me down this road, and it was written by a guy who is one of these libertarian types, very strong libertarian. He went to Annapolis and took his commission in the Marine Corps, went to, I think it was Gulf War I, and he really sort of got his eyes opened as to what he ended up doing over there and how it worked out versus what he was told and programmed. And he wrote a book called Starve the Monkeys. And that's basically his philosophy. The whole book's boiled down into how do you starve the leeches? How do you cut the leeches off? And anything you can do that fails to make you pay taxes, and he's not talking about break the law. You know, it's going back to the example of if you catch your own food, you have done something that is perfectly legal. You know, even if you have to pay the sheriff for the trapping license, you know, you abide by the law to the minimum, and then after that, it's all gravy for you, and they're cut out of the picture. The more I can make government irrelevant, the less I really care what they're doing, and the less that I'm going to get worked up over whatever is on the news. You know, I don't even watch the news anymore. I mean, I could care less what's on the news. I could care less what Antifa is doing. I don't care what the latest scandal in Hollywood is. I could care less. And by not getting worked up over all of that, not getting pissed off about the fact that the Clintons aren't in handcuffs, or so-and-so is not wearing an orange jumpsuit, or Bowie Bergdahl, the traitor, got off scot-free. You know, none of that affects me. I have no control over it. And my energy is better spent putting time in my garden, developing other income streams, and learning. And it's like I mentioned last time, you know, there's so much to learn. You know, gathering mushrooms, those are extremely potent and powerful medicinal elements that you can go and get free rather than pay through the nose at the health food store, at the yuppie health food store. And also it goes back to, if you remember the last trapping radio that Clint just did, where Mitch, Captain Mitch down in Mobile, sent his audio question in about bartering and how, you know, he would do something for a guy and then they would do something back for him, and how much of a help it was. And he's absolutely correct in that. And that is huge, because it's not this bartering fantasy that you get on the survivalist board. boards and forums, which these people have no idea what they're talking about. I spent 6 years in Central and South America. I learned a heck of a lot about the lack of government and how people get along in real life without government. And you get on the survivalist boards and on all this crap, and they're like, well, we're stocking up on 22 shells for barter. Like, you're going to go give somebody 5 22 long rifle shells for an apple or some crap, some idiot crap like that. That's not bartering. That will never happen. That doesn't happen. It happens exactly like Mitch described. And if you didn't hear that question, go back to the last Trapping Radio that Clint just did and listen to it. And basically, he's talking about, you know people and, you know, different individuals and different families, and you have a skill. And, you know, he was talking about he gave some deer meat to a fella, and then this guy evidently was a mechanic and was able to work on his tractor. And, you know, that's how people get along. And that is critical in building networks. And so when people talk about networking, I'm not talking about networking in a militia group or anything like that. I'm talking about, you know, this guy's a mechanic. Like, I have a friend who's a doctor and his wife is a nurse. You talk about a valuable skill set. Guess what? If he needs meat, if he wants to go hunting, you know, he comes to me and says, you know, I really don't know anything about it. I'd love to go, and I'd love to just watch and learn. Do you think there's any way we could go hunting this year? What do you think I'm going to tell that guy? Of course there's a way you can go hunting, no problem. You can use my rifle. I've got an extra rifle. It's already sighted in. Hey, you need extra clothes? Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of everything. Let's go hunting. And then in the middle of the night, when somebody has an issue and, you know, it's the weekend's coming up and I need a prescription, all I do is give him a call and say, hey man, is there any way that you could phone some antibiotics in for my wife, blah blah blah? No problem. Calls it in, boom, done. That is networking, and that is a way that you cut the government out. You're no longer, see, I'm not using health insurance. I'm not paying the doctor's visit. He's not having to declare the income. All of that's cut out. All of it's off the books, and it's 100% legal. You know, there's no laws being broken there, because there was no tit for tat value, no quid pro quo of I will take you hunting if you will write me a prescription for antibiotics. And another thing is, like, exactly what Clint was talking about when he said, you know, if the law says I have to have a license to do ADC work, then I'm not going to do ADC work. I'm going to go rent the guy the traps, and I'm going to provide instruction on how to use the traps. But I'm not actually doing the ADC work. And you see, lawyers pull this kind of stuff all the time. You know, that's why the Clintons don't have handcuffs on, is because they have mastered this skill, and it is high time for us to master that same skill. And so, yes, freedom is worth fighting for, but make sure you know what freedom really is. And freedom doesn't involve strapping a gun on and going somewhere else. That's not what freedom involves. Freedom starts at home. Freedom starts with what we put in our bodies. Freedom starts with what we think. It starts with what we say. You know, and if you think about government schools, you're not free to feed your kid what you want. If the school system doesn't agree with what you're feeding them, it's not going to be allowed. Your government schools, you're not free to have your kid taught what version of history you think is acceptable. They decide which version of history your child will be taught. They decide what he's going to eat what he's going to drink. They decide everything. You decide nothing. And so one of my aspects of a freedom quest was to change that, to cut them out of the picture. And of course, it took an extreme situation for me to finally make that jump. But we're getting to the point where just about everything is becoming extreme. You know, in a future episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about medical marijuana and different things like that. And it's always funny when things hit home. It's one thing to tell other people how to live their lives, but when you or someone that you know and love has issues, then all of a sudden it's a little bit different. And what we have to do in this country is we've got to learn to live and let live. And there are too many people that want to get in our face and tell us what to think, what to say, how to act, what to eat, what to drink, and everything else. And if they keep it up, then they're going to get a bullet in the face. And that's when it's time to go to war. You know, I had decided to do an episode of all the wars that this country has waged. But suffice it to say that we've been basically continuously at war since 1848, between the Mexican-American War and the Civil War, the Indian Wars, the Seminole Wars, World War I, the Spanish-American War, which was in Cuba and going to the Philippines, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, all of the Gulf Wars, the Afghanistan War, it's constant, and every single one of them has been in the name of freedom. Every single one of them has been about, quote-unquote, what they tell us is freedom. And not a damn one of them has been about what you are allowed to put in your body or what you are allowed to say or do. I mean, we're in a dust-up now with North Korea. North Korea. You know, the Korean War was in 1950, 51, 52, 53. That's been 50, almost 70 years. And we've still got troops manning the wall after 70 freaking years. I mean, it's absurd. None of that makes me any freer. But yet the North Koreans now, you know, they're ready to drop an EMP on us. I mean, that's a serious possibility. You know, if we had never gone to Korea, I doubt that they would be looking to drop an EMP on us. I really doubt that. But anyway, so that's my take on the whole issue of what is freedom. And it seems like freedom is something that one group of people like to inflict upon another. All you have to do is look at the Indian Wars. It's really amazing. But that's probably material for another episode. I have really been studying all of the Indian conflicts. And the one thing I will say, because we're starting to run long here, but the westward expansion of the settlers and the European settlers in the United States, and their conflict with the Indians, to me that was one of the most recent and glaring conflicts between grain eaters and hunter gatherers. I know the Indians did do some limited agricultural pursuits, but it goes back to that episode that I did on the grain eaters and the hunter gatherers, and it's a classic example, you know. And it doesn't matter the relative merits of one position or another. We all know who won. So anyway, Barry, I hope that sort of explains where I'm coming from, at least, and is where I'm, you know, all I'll tell you is that freedom starts at home, and true freedom is worth fighting for. And I never use the term worth dying for. I use the term worth killing for. And that's the one thing that I come back to on a regular basis when I think through such things is when a man shows up at my door and he's willing to go to war for his paycheck, well, I'm willing to go to war for my freedom. And I just hope his paycheck is worth it, because I know my freedom is. And I've already made those decisions. I'm already very comfortable with what I'm willing to do and why. And enough about that. So anyway, I hope this was thought-provoking. And Jesse, I have not forgotten about your question about the freeze-drying. And that will be addressed in a later episode. I just didn't have time to get to it tonight, and it was sort of not in the general vein of the discussion. So don't think I'm ignoring you, buddy. But that's it's a very interesting subject, and I've done some research on it, and we'll talk about that in a later episode. So thanks for listening, fellas. Y'all have a good week, and we'll see you next time.